when you decide on the CRM, involve your team. Don't just choose one and then impose it on them. That's never going to end well. First of all, you're not really sure whether they want to use that specific one because they haven't tried it together with you. And second, is really sitting together with them and thinking like, which fields do we need? Which fields don't we really need? How do we fill them out? How do we use this and that feature? Because in the end, if you do everything in a consistent and thought through way, and it doesn't have to take much time to think it through, it can be as easy as a few meetings and then just track in Google Docs, say, this is how we do things. Then the CRM becomes more than just what I said, like a tool to follow up leads. It becomes a tool through which you can communicate and where you can pull segments, where you have consistent data, make nice reports. If you don't, and the data is very inconsistent, then all these things won't happen.
It's no secret that the coronavirus is affecting all of us as individuals, but the effect it's having on business, especially small business, is unprecedented. We need a game plan, and fast. If we're going to survive this, we need resources and we need each other. We can't do it alone. I'm Jesse Torres, and this is Hack My Business. With my background in economic and workforce development, disaster preparedness, and general business strategy, I know I can help you navigate this scary time in your business and beyond. It's all about resiliency. I'll have the most current solutions and best practices available so we can ensure your business not only survives this crisis, but thrives. We'll also be keeping you informed about the latest resources for small business so that you don't miss a thing. Co-hosting with me will be my colleague, Sid Varakara. We'll have invited experts to help us navigate through the current noisy landscape of resources and programs that are being made available today and who will be able to prepare us for tomorrow. Let's do this together. I'm Jesse Torres, and this is Hack My Business.
Hi, and welcome back to Hack My Business. This is Jesse Torres, creator and host of Hack My Business. Great to be with all of you entrepreneurs once again, sharing great advice and tips from people who really understand everything about entrepreneurship and small business development. Really excited to be joined today with Jeroen Korhout, who is the co-founder and CEO of SalesFlare, an intelligent customer relationship management software company that helps small and medium-sized businesses automate their data and make more business-to-business sales. We're going to be talking with Jeroen today about the genesis and work of SalesFlare. And also, I want to get his thoughts about everything around effective customer relation management and definitely what he sees ahead about the future of business intelligence. Jeroen, so great to have you on Hack My Business.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for the great intro.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I definitely want to start with your background because you have a really interesting background that involves the life sciences, the biomedical industry. So really curious about what your journey was and how you found yourself in your own entrepreneurship journey.
I guess if we would be talking about my entrepreneurship journey, I think it started when I was 15 or 16. I discovered the joy of building websites. I always liked building stuff as a kid, like drawing or just building something with wooden blocks. We had this thing called Kapla, or Lego, or building camps in the woods, or whatnot. But when I discovered building websites, that was a whole new thing for me. I liked computers. I liked playing games on computers. And then all of a sudden, I could create this this really magical stuff, especially because it was a time of Flash. It's dead now, but it was all the rage back then. And I could build these really beautiful websites that were animated. They even had music sometimes and all that. And I built a few of those, and I saw myself actually starting a business. I saw myself having a web agency. And then when I started studying engineering, I thought I was going to be a computer engineer because I thought that that's where my future is. But then when I saw what these people were doing on the open day and I saw the people themselves, I thought, oh, that's kind of nerdy. That doesn't seem like something for me. So I ended up taking a different path. I did electrotechnical engineering, still nerdy, but then went to do biomedical engineering because I thought I could make a bigger difference that way, but also learn much more because I had all these medical courses as well, which was super exciting. Now, when I started applying for jobs, I found out I actually didn't want to be an engineer. I really enjoyed studying it, but I didn't see myself in the back room building stuff. I wanted to do that together with customers, like back in the day when I was building websites. One day, I was so disappointed with the job offers I got that I applied for business school. I took the credit card of a friend and paid for the first test. And I got in. And actually, this allowed me to completely change my career. My first job was not in engineering, it was in marketing. And that's because I thought that would be the best way to actually learn how to start a company. It was in the life sciences industry, so I was in I started off my career in Baxter, which is a US pharma company, in the local branch in Belgium. I thought it would teach me all these amazing things, and I had big expectations. They didn't get fulfilled so much. It was actually a really boring job in which I was making brochures and training the sales team on how to use the brochure. And now and then I could do something vaguely interesting, but nothing much. And that's actually when I discovered that in the pharma industry, then people didn't know anything about digital. And I knew everything about building websites. So that was sort of my superpower. If people were building a website for their doctors or for their patients, they would ask me. So I thought, oh, I could start a web agency for pharma companies, right? And I talked about that with someone I knew. I discovered he had a company that did that, and I joined him for a while. So I started working for him. I did that for 4 years, but I never could really let go of that itch to start my own company. So during that time, I started working part-time for that company, and I started trying different projects. Once I started a sort of a way for doctors to stay on top of the latest research, I started a website that allowed you to plan your trip to Brazil for the World Cup cool. better. I started a telemedicine company together with some other guys. It was a way for nurses to keep track of the pacemaker results. Lots of different pacemakers all in one dashboard. But none of these things really succeeded. At least that last company, it actually in the end succeeded. But that was after I decided to leave it because I didn't see it going anywhere. But Salesflare actually then started when I joined my co-founder, who I met in one of these adventures. And he had a company that helped big companies to report better on their data. And I joined him on that company. We had a lot of good leads for the software that we built. But it was really hard to track those leads through the whole pipeline. And there were long sales cycles, and we had to follow up really well. And we tried different software to organize ourselves, but we always hit the same sort of limitation. It's that the software had these kind of huge expectations, like when it comes to the amount of data input we would do. Basically, it required us to input every little thing we saw, every piece of data, every little thing we did, we had to put in that system. If we did that consistently, it helped us follow up our sales. If we didn't, it did not at all. I mean, our sales would follow up would still be crappy. And because we were so frustrated by that problem, we thought about solutions. And we considered building a system. It actually is what we built today. A system that tracks things automatically. That starts from all the data that is already there in your mailbox and in your calendar and your phone and social media and you know, all kinds of tracking and LinkedIn. Sort of takes all that data together, organizes it for you, and tracks things for you. So the system is not dependent on your data, but it does that for you, and you can follow up in a better way with your leads.
You know, just hearing about your journey, because, you know, we always like to share with our own listeners is how everybody has their own path, right, to get to, you know, how they start the company. And often what is really interesting is that sometimes the more complex or, you know, kind of winding the journey is, the better prepared you are for, you know, where you end up and what your success is, because you're pulling from all that information and all that experience. I mean, you're understanding from the beginning about websites and how they work, your movement into different industries, you know, all that kind of comes into play. You know, something I'll mention to you, you know, I have two young kids. One's 12, about to be 13. The other one's just turned 11. And, you know, what excites them about technology is coming from gaming. You know, so where you and I were at the forefront, yeah. right? Of like Flash and all that kind of media. For them, it's about the more advanced platforms, right? The YouTube videos, the social media, the virtual tools, the virtual worlds that they're seeing being created. And so I'm watching to see like, where will that take them? Like my son this summer choosing to start to learn Java, right? Because he was interested about Minecraft, right? And so where for us, it was the very beginning. Like I remember taking computer science camp and, you know, learning about Logo, right? The basics of moving stuff around, right? But for them, it's going to be so much more complex. Yeah, right?
Yeah, I also wonder how that's going to be. Like for many entrepreneurs my age, I know it's similar to my experience. Like you played games, then you discovered it was fun to build websites, and then all of a sudden you have a SaaS company. Right. I mean, I'm simplifying it now. I wonder how that's going to be for kids in the future, but for sure it's really important, I think, as a kid and as a grown up afterwards, to just do whatever you have a passion for. And it might be lots of different things. And I think it's important, because what people think is a career is linear.
Right.
Like you start somewhere and then you do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and it all makes sense. But actually it's more like, I think Steve Jobs says that in this commencement address at Stanford or so, he says, it only makes sense looking backwards.
Right.
Like you just do whatever you're passionate about. And then if you look backwards, the dots will start connecting. And it will bring you to the next phase, but the most important thing is along the way just to have fun, and I think the rest will follow and deliver value,
right?
Like Elon Musk would say.
Totally, yeah. You know, yeah. It's also interesting. Like sometimes you learn the most when things don't quite work out. You always remember I happened to go to school with Travis Kalanick, who started Uber UCLA, and always remember, you know, his first company didn't work out that well, but he sure learned a lot from that experience. But you know, I'm really interested in, you know, what you saw with Salesforce was really the opportunity to make things more efficient, you know, even with when it came to actually running the operations yourself, and I guess that value potential for customers. But, you know, what excites you about digital systems, about data infrastructure? Like why that world, you know, what about it in particular really kind of motivates you?
That's a good question. I just like to make sure that managing data is not a bane, because it can very easily be. And if you can build a system that automates a lot of things there and then brings things together and then builds things on top of that, you can make life so much easier. If you compare that with having a system in which you pull leads, and then you have another system which you send sequences, and you have another system which you track the data but it's not automated, and then you have some other thing where you try to build reports, it's such a big pain, and you're always moving data around. We try to bring it all together in one place, automate it all, and in the end our dream is to also make almost a sentient system. No, like an artificially intelligent system, because it has so much data and it knows all about all these different interactions, all the things that are going on, and that it can actually start automating all away all the parts of the sales process that are not human parts, that are more like data management parts, routinous parts, not where you would apply your actual like human touch, like understanding people and empathizing. Computer is not good at that, but a computer is really good at bringing all that data together and making sense of it.
Absolutely. And it's so fascinating you bring that up, because this week, for those who've been following the news, there was an amazing article about a Google engineer who said that it's their AI, artificial intelligent chatbot, has achieved some level of sentience. So I you know, whether or not that's true or how accurate that is, it does feel like we're at this really kind of forefront of something very different, very complex around these systems, right, that we've built, and now becoming much more evolved. You know, I guess from, you know, for those small businesses, and we have, you know, our listeners, I would say are, you know, going to be under 10 employees for the most part. You know, folks are either starting out or just starting to grow. Mm-hmm. So why don't we just start kind of breaking it down? Like what exactly is a customer relationship management tool? And what value does that type of tool bring for small businesses? And I got to tell you that I have dangerous knowledge about the subject. I used to be a major gift fundraiser back in the day. So I had to use all types of CRM tools to capture donor information. And I've had to use CRMs even for my personal work and with the Royal West. So I have some dangerous knowledge. But for those who maybe aren't as familiar, like what is it exactly? And how much of a value is it to the small business owner?
Yeah. First of all, CRM stands for customer relationship management, like you said, system. So you're managing customer relationships. And now, depending on the type of business you're in, that might mean different things. If you're fundraising, you need to know who donated in the past, how much, and maybe some part about our demographics. And you know, there's very specific systems. If you're in e-commerce, it's about tracking repeat sales, mostly making sure that people keep buying from you. We mostly focus on B2B sales, and there, if you would ask our customers what they use our system for, it's really for following up leads. It's making sure that people who have a problem also end up buying your solution. And there's a sales process in between, and you need to follow up that well. You need to know at each step in the process, like what is the next step, when do we take the next step, what are the blockers on their side. Keep track of the whole process. And a big part of managing a relationship is managing communication, because a relationship is built on communication and interactions, and timing things very well, and remembering things. And if you're in B2B sales, it's also mostly not one person you're in touch with. It's multiple people at a company, and managing that as well, managing their group decision process.
At what stage should an entrepreneur be thinking about adopting a tool? Is this something that should just be part of your kind of initial product buy? You know, is this something you do along as you buy, you know, your word processing software? Or, you know, what's your advice around that?
I think as soon as it's more than leads or so, which hopefully is the case very soon, I think you should start using a CRM system. A sheet is good for tracking a few basic things, but I just said that the tracking the timeline of interactions and your communication and communicating is the most important part. You cannot track such a thing in a sheet. You can try it, but you're going to fail. You could put like comments on a cell or something and get a timeline like that, but it's always going to be weird. We obviously started off with a CRM from the very start. I think I used Streak before we got Salesforce ready, and then migrated our data over at some point to Salesforce. Because in the end, when you start a company, in the beginning, you're probably doing some customer research. Like you're doing interviews with a bunch of people to really understand whether the thing you have in mind is something that they're interested in, to shape it in the right way. And that's actually where the sales sort of already starts, because these people you're getting through your customer interview pipeline, those are also potential customers for the future, because you're interviewing them to really know their leads, and in the end you're going to try to sell to them. So I think from that stage already it makes sense. And most CRMs you'll find either are free, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend that, because free has a price, obviously, or have some sort of heavily discounted program so that you can afford it. And CRMs by themselves are already cheap for what you get. So.
I love that free always has a price. And I think that's really true. I mean, there's certain things you can get probably off the shelf, but once you start using them, at least the free versions, you'll discover that the limited options will soon drive you crazy. At least that's been my experience. You know, speaking to your peers' remarks, as far as the value of that automation, I mean, just as someone who's used CRM tools in the past, I've done it. I've used them to track everything from, okay, when is the right time to send out this proposal? You know, at what stage am I at with this individual? Are they reviewing my proposal? Are they going to make a decision soon? You know, often the tool will have some type of probability kind of factor that helps you understand how likely you are to get that kind of proposal. And frankly, a lot of it is just kind of peace of mind. You know, the more, you know, sophisticated tools that you can get will do everything from tracking your email interactions, give you an opportunity to capture, you know, your specific interactions or actions with a certain type of client. So a lot of it kind of goes beyond, at least in my perspective, like the project management. Like, this is a tool you can have for project management and moving something forward. This is something a little bit different, where it allows you to really understand what is your relationship with certain firms, certain individuals, you know, even tracking where people can go from company to company, because that becomes very useful. So there's a lot of value, at least, you know, from what I've seen, in having a CRM tool. I know for many of our listeners, they're probably thinking, how technologically sophisticated do I need to be? And I'll tell you, man, that one of my first jobs ever out of college was working for the University of Southern California, which is funny because they're my big college rival, but I did end up working there. But I was managing their donor, you know, donations that are coming in for the health sciences campus, you know, millions of dollars. And we actually didn't have a database, so I had to create one using Access at that time, which meant literally I had to learn how to set it up, how to, you know, create the mapping of everything. And, you know, it was a struggle because that wasn't my background at all. I remember buying this, you know, at that time, the huge books, you know, about how to do it. You know, how technologically sophisticated do you need to be now these days? Is it really easy to do, or what level of understanding do you need to have before you adopt any of these tools or your own tool?
No, I think the tools nowadays don't need you to be technical anymore, which is great, because you can get started right away and look at the software, almost understand it by itself, and then maybe watch a few videos and you understand everything perfectly, and you're off to the races. Now, there is a disadvantage to this, And that's that you might not think through as well as you would in the past, where you would have to read books and really think things like, how am I going to set this up? You just start an account and you can start selling almost. What I see then is that it makes companies skip some steps. Maybe they don't think their process through. They don't discuss with their team how to set up certain fields and what that means. They don't discuss whether they're going to, for instance, use a certain feature and in which way. Like, are we going to use the tasks? Are we not going to use the tasks? Or when are we going to log a certain thing or not? Those are still important things. So I would say you can just jump in super easily and get started. Also, do try to stand still for a moment and think, especially if you're working as a team, like, how can we do this together in the most optimal way? Because if you don't, you're going to very quickly run into issues later on.
I should have talked to you a long time ago, because I have done that repeatedly where, you know, I'll take on a new tool and I'll just start, you know, just start using it because I need to just move forward. And then 3 months later, 6 months later, I'll be thinking, man, I sure set it up wrong. You know, I sure started doing the wrong things early, because now I need to backtrack and revise, or even sometimes even more expensively, hire somebody to essentially fix my database. You know, I always remember working at a theater where we had to hire somebody to fix, I think he had to adjust like a decimal point in, you know, thousands of records, because we just set it up. Like, the initial setup was all wrong. And so then if later on, it meant that we had to revise all these records, you know, because we didn't do it correctly. So I think that's really sound advice. Before you start playing with the toy, maybe learn the instructions, maybe think about the use case for your own business before you start really kind of fully deploying it. That makes good sense.
Definitely. The use case is the first thing.
Yeah.
I would say think about your use case well. When you decide on the CRM, involve your team. Don't just choose one and then impose it on them. That's never going to end well. First of all, you're not really sure whether they want to use that specific one, because they haven't tried it together with you. And second, you don't have their buy-in for sure. You said, let's use this whatever system. And then third is really sitting together with them and thinking like, guys, which fields do we need? Which fields don't we really need? How do we fill them out? How do we use this and that feature? Because in the end, if you do everything in a consistent and thought through way, and it doesn't have to take much time to think it through, it can be as easy as a few meetings, and then just track it in Google Docs, say, this is how we do things. Then the CRM becomes more than just what I said, like a tool to follow up leads. It becomes a tool through which you can communicate, where you can pull segments, where you have consistent data, make nice reports. If you don't, and the data is very inconsistent, then all these things won't happen. And you'll run into problems really quickly. Changing a decimal point is still relatively okay in terms of change you can make. It depends on how complicated the system is. But very often it's really, really messy. And just a simple operation won't fix the database anymore.
Right.
And it can be easily prevented by just talking with your colleagues, let's say.
Absolutely. You know, I'm curious about, how is Salesflare different from all the other CRM tools? You know, how are you guys approaching the work, and what additional value are you bringing to your customers?
Yeah, so if you try Salesflare, you can just try it on the site, Jesse. Sure. You'll see that it's the only CRM out there that actually starts from existing data. So you connect your inbox and it starts mining your inbox, and it auto creates contacts based on your inbox, and it finds email signatures in the emails, puts that on the contacts. It finds more information from social media. But then also, as you create an account, so a company you're selling to, it will tell you who you already know at that company based on your inbox, based on your calendar. And as you add contacts to accounts, it immediately fills the timeline. So it's really, really simple to get started. You don't have to input data. You just have to do some clicks. And it also keeps itself up to date. Well, if you will try competing software, you'll find that even though they have things like email sync or calendar sync or so, the systems by themselves are still largely manual, and it's very hard to keep them up to date. And if you don't keep them up to date, then you actually don't get the value from them. So they're very dependent on you to do stuff to then also get value from it. And the likelihood is very high that you won't do it.
That's always been one of my biggest challenges, that challenge, right, in the contact system, you know, and it kind of updating, me having to update it versus the system updating it for me. So I think that's really interesting. I'm so fascinated. I guess the market for CRM tools is really dense. I mean, you have Salesforce, you have Blackbaud, you know, HubSpot, you know, other kind of major companies. Mm-hmm. And this is more getting to you as the entrepreneur, you as the CEO. What is your strategy? I mean, and also just to help our listeners who are maybe also starting their own kind of digital tool, you know, how do you stay competitive, you know, especially when you have such big kind of titans and they're pushing each other around? Like, what is your strategy? How do you focus on your work?
Yeah, we were indeed facing companies like HubSpot and Salesforce and Pipedrive. So those are some of our biggest competitors, and they range from being 100 times bigger to 10,000 times bigger.
Does that scare you?
And it's really...
Is that frightening?
Well, we've been doing this for a while, so it's not frightening. It's more frustrating. Mm. Because we cannot just grow by throwing money at the problem. We cannot say let's run some ads and we'll get customers, because people have much more money to throw at ads, and that makes it insanely expensive for us. So we, on the one hand, need to focus on what we're really good at, and that is making the best product, delivering the best support, making the easiest experience, writing the best blog posts, these kind of things. And it's on trying to find people in ways that the others aren't really great at. So we do a lot of effort when it comes to content marketing. We do a lot of effort when it comes to trying to partner up with other systems. It's not easy, but being a small business also has a few advantages. And that's that you, as a team, you know much better what you're doing. You're much closer all to the customer and to the product, which means that you can deliver better quality on many levels. And those are the things you need to hold on to make a difference. Because when it's a money-based competition, we're not going to make it anyway.
Absolutely. I'm curious, you know, because you do have a technical background, website development, even understanding kind of systems in the bio space. How close are you to the, you know, the software design? You know, do you have a team where you just have them run that itself and you're just kind of playing higher level strategy? Or do you yourself get into the design and the look and feel and the operation of those software tools?
I go very deeply into at least the functional design. I don't go into the technical design much, maybe higher level, but definitely not the details. That's up to the tech team. But when it comes to what customers want and translating that all the way to how the interface should work, that's something we do as a team. And my co-founder and I are involved all the way. He's the one who writes the tech specs, so that's up to him. But all the rest, yeah.
That's great. Really interesting. You know, kind of jumping back a bit, just on business intelligence, technology, and data aggregation. I mean, what I've seen is just the incredible advancement of that space, and it's getting so much easier to just capture a whole lot of data about people. I mean, I know you guys do too, but the connecting of the, you know, the client profile to say their LinkedIn, right? To you're now pulling in or have the ability to pull in some very personal information. And then, you know, frankly, a lot of it can be used for a lot of different purposes, you know, some maybe not so positive, but how do you advise, I mean, now that we have the ability to just capture so much information, but that can be very noisy, it can be very difficult to figure out, okay, what makes sense, you know, what is the true value as far as like your business relationship? How do you advise business owners on the effective use of data? You know, what makes sense to collect? And do you put limitations around that? Do you set parameters about what you can pull? And just really curious about your thoughts about that, you know, that ability to gather all that big data now.
I think as long as the data collection is automated, I think you could collect as much as you want, as long as the platform sort of supports that, and it doesn't overclutter things. But for that, for instance, we built all kinds of filtering systems in our software, so any field you have on any different level you can filter on, and it makes that it always stays controllable. But the very opposite is true. If you're asking people to fill out the data, then I think you should keep it as limited as possible, because the most important thing is that people use the system and people actually use it for their work, and that is often sabotaged by creating lots of different fields that you then ask the team to fill out, or make these very complex flows, or make certain fields required, so every time they try to create something, it says, "Ah, you should fill this out," and they're like, "Nah, I hate it." As long as systems automatically gather it, I wouldn't put up any limitations. As long as you can filter things and it stays manageable, and which if it's good software, it will. If people need to manage it, keep it very limited to make sure that they actually use the system.
Yeah, I think online online is the optimal use. Like, what are you using the information for? Is it helping you get to a further place, or progress with a certain client or advancement in your own business? But be careful, because sometimes you can have a whole lot of data that you're just aren't using, and you're just it's actually adding clutter to your life versus helping you advance your business. But great tools will help you really decipher how to best use that information.
Yeah. That depends. I mean, if there's a lot of data, but it's not immediately in your face, but you can still drill down, then you have the ideal situation, I think. And then it doesn't matter how much data you have.
What is that fine line, do you think, of, I guess, when, between a helpful CRM and maybe something more creepy? I think about my kids' world today, where so much of themselves is online and like a virtual. But where is that line as far as that data collection? How should we be thinking about the distinction between, like, okay, this is useful information to have, and now this is maybe something going into collecting social security numbers, or I just love your thoughts around that. What is that line there?
Collecting social security numbers. I don't know whether that is, if it makes sense business wise. And it's not violating any laws, then you can do it, I guess. Like us in Europe, we have very stringent laws when it comes to the sort of data you can collect, how long you can keep it, and all these kind of things. And I think all these things make sense, and they're so strict that I don't think it makes much sense for yourself to go much further. I don't really see big issues as long as you're not hurting people's privacy, and you have a reason to collect the data, right? Not just to have a lot of data.
See, here in the US, you have a bad habit of just collecting data just to have it, sometimes for not so great reasons. So it's great. I think Europe has always led the way as far as privacy, versus in the US it's often us ourselves giving up our privacy, right? For others. But I think understanding applicable law makes sense, and also just having your own internal policy as far as data management, data protection, and be careful, because threats of cyber attack, that kind of thing, the more data you collect, sometimes the more vulnerable your own company can be, especially if you're collecting very sensitive information, of your customers.
Data protection is extremely important, because even if you have a good reason to have the data, someone else might not, and someone else might have malicious intentions with it. That's really important if you're choosing tools, that you make sure that they're secure. And unfortunately, many tools that you think should be secure are not in the end. And you can find some kind of data dump somewhere in the internet with all their usernames and passwords, and maybe even other stuff. But
yeah, it's become such more much more open world. I'm curious, just kind of thinking about artificial intelligence, sophisticated tools. When you look ahead and you think about the future of business intelligence, what excites you the most? Maybe what scares you the most, just based on what you've seen? But what does it look like to you over the next 5-10 years?
Yeah, I think business intelligence has always been about, like, having data and reporting on it. And what we've seen over the past 10 years or so is that it has become way easier for people to do that and to really explore data, and that's really cool. But I think the aspect where data is actually used within a process to be to do a better job with customers, I think is even more exciting to me than pure data exploration, let's say, to explore data. It's really using data to do a better job with customers, to understand them better, to provide better follow-up service. And that's where we are constantly building things, trying to add more tools to Salesforce to make sure that we not just create extra functionality, which is handy, but also make sure that the data that is there is better managed, more automated. There's more data, and the more data that makes sense that is available, the more things you can build that actually help serve that goal of serving people in a better. And just building that really excites me. Always thinking about what is the next step, what sort of things will make sense to add to our system for both reasons. For the reason of people just being able to serve customers better in the short term, but also in a way that it creates data that then makes that in the long term, it will become even better.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I mean, it feels many ways that we're still very much at the beginning of things, you know, that we've accelerated, we've built these amazing platforms, but now where they'll go from there, what will be built from there? I mean, when we first, you know, got started in the technological world, I mean, the idea of like an Amazon, a marketplace, right, you know, was so far, so far beyond, yeah, you know, what I ever thought the internet would be all about. And now you have very sophisticated tools that allow for just amazing builds, you know, and where that will take us will be really incredible to watch. But I love, you know, what you said is, you know, at the end of the day, anything we build should really just be about providing additional value to the client, you know, to the customer you're trying to serve, right? And I think that's a really important thing to have in your mind. You know, is this providing value? You know, is this driving you to a better relationship, to a more productive relationship? You know, if it isn't, you should be thinking twice about how you're using the tool and how you're applying it, because it's not mm-hmm. quite getting you there. Yeah, you know, what comes next for Salesforce? You know, what are you guys working on? What does the next generation of Salesforce look like?
So Salesforce started off as this automated CRM, and we've been adding all kinds of tools to it. So it has things like email sequences built in that you can trigger on top of the data. When people match a certain filter, they get a certain sequence of emails until the reply or something. You can use email templates and tracking. You can integrate it with LinkedIn. We've been adding all kinds of things that just make it a more complete sales platform, which then creates better data, like I said, which then enables you to do even cooler things. And along the same lines, one of the big remaining issues is people juggling with lead data. So you search for the right company somewhere, then you download that data somehow, then you need to upload it to your CRM and then deduplicate it, and you know, it's really hard to manage. We are building that into Salesforce right now, so you can do it all in one flow. So when you're searching for leads, you can see, oh, these people I'm already in touch with, actually in the future we'll probably also be able to say, but these are good customers for you, so then you probably these people as well. But the first version will really make it easy to take people through the whole flow really easily, find the right leads, reach out to them, and then follow them up all the way to a closed deal.
That's great. Salesforce is not, and you guys don't sponsor anything with Hack My Business, but it's so curious. I'm actually in the market for a new CRM, so it's really fascinating to hear about what you're working on, because it really gels with what some of the challenges I have with my own firm, you know, and finding out which was the best lead, you know, who's connected to other leads, and how can I leverage the existing work I do to tap into them as a potential client. So yeah, that's really interesting. I know we'll have to do an offline for my own business on Salesforce. But how can, you know, for those folks who want to get in touch with you or learn more about Salesforce, what's the best way to do that?
For Salesforce, it's just salesforce.com. You know, like I said, you can try the software there, read about it, check out the blog and whatnot. And if you want to get in touch with me, LinkedIn is the best place. There's only one person with my exact name. If you find my name somewhere, type it into LinkedIn. Send me a connection request with a personal message, please. If you do not include a personal message, I will think it's spam. But if you do, I'll certainly connect with you and we can have a chat.
That's great. Great tip for everybody. That's a good best practice. Yurin, so good to have you on Hack My Business. Thank you for sharing your insights. Thank you for sharing about Salesforce. Really excited to see what comes next for you and the company. But it's been a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Take care.
If you need help and want to be a part of our community and find resources to grow your business, join us at our website at smallbusinessfront.com. We'd love to see you there. Have a great day, and we'll catch you next time on Hack My Business.